Blog Talk Radio.
I'll let it just give that enough.
Tonight is June the 28th, 2022. And this is Blog Talk Radio, What's Happening? And tonight the question is, the American definition of colonialism or black faces in high places or how do political parties operate in communities of color? Within that context, we are saying the cleverest lies are those we are inclined to believe, i.e., Biden is the lesser of two evils, i.e., Eric Adams is the lesser of two evils, i.e., Kamala Harris is the lesser of two evils. And you can go on and on and on. The clown that's supposed to be the person that represents the military, the clowns Austin, or the clowns all over the country that they have put in front of us as mayors. What we are saying to you is, it would appear the human movement is such that at any moment in history, there are too few who understand possibilities of existence that would benefit all who inhabit this planet and who are willing to act on this understanding. That's what we believe on this program. We want to be a part of those few. We want to keep the banner high. We want to keep marching no matter how far back the barbarians try to push us. So without further ado, this is a discussion of colonialism. This is a discussion of imperialism. This is definitely a discussion of fascism. And we have so many people on the call tonight that we will definitely extend the program. And within the context of this program, this is the last live program until after Labor Day. The following weeks between now and Labor Day, we're going to give our comrades a rest, but we know they will not be resting. Like us, they will be out there trying to push the rock of Sisyphus back up that hill again. But you will be able to hear us. We will be replaying some of our most popular MP3 programs for you. So without further ado, Ralph Pointer, what is happening?
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. Glad you could join us tonight. And that is not totally true. We are going to continue through the summer on 99.5 on your FM radio on Wednesdays at 8 p.m. So please stay tuned because we will be asking you for input on those programs. Now to tonight's discussion, American Definition of Colonialism, or Black Faces in High Places, or How Do Political Parties Operate in Communities of Color? Well, in brief, the political system in America, and we're going to talk about merely another chapter in the American book of never looking at the root of the problem, but find a way to avoid the roots while convincing people that the avoidance is the solution. We will be more attentive, I am sure, to global warming as the effects of limited growing seasons in America take its toll on more Americans. Now, we have been witnessing the death and destruction of global warming around the world. Bangladesh, most of it, millions are underwater. And I'm not going to go into that. We can talk about Africa, all of the deaths, all of the things that we've been talking about. We're going to avoid that this evening, and we're going to stick to an overriding thing which most of our listeners are aware of. It. Are we living in interesting times? Are we living in exciting times? Are we living in a moment of exhilaration at the possibilities of solutions and making more people in America aware? We're going to make some announcements of what are the possibilities of the downside of what's happening in America. And I ask the question, do we have to see people in brown shirts marching through our streets to wake us up? But we'll have more of that, and we're going to look to you, our participating audience, to give us some answers. How do you see these problems? Sister Betty.
Well, as always, we start off by remembering Sister Lynn and honoring her life. And we do that with liberation poetry. So we're going to open up the mic for one of our contributors and former political prisoner. Your mic is open. Thank you for joining us yet again.
Your microphone is... Thank you. We hear you. Be loud and clear.
Good evening, comrades. Glad to be on this show, and we'll have to switch over to Wednesday nights, like you suggested, beginning next week for a while. I have two very, very powerful poems by Asada Shakur. And the first one, second one's a little shorter than the first one. The first one on for black women, so I think it's only appropriate that Sister Gloria over here will read that for us now.
Rhinoceros
Welcome,
woman.
Sister Gloria.
Thank you. Rhinoceros woman, who nobody wants and everybody use. They say you're crazy because you're not crazy enough to kneel when told to kneel. Hey, big woman, with scars on the head and scars on the heart that never seem to heal, I saw your light and it was shining. You gave them love. They gave you shit. You gave them you. They gave you Hollywood. They purr at you because you know how to roar and back it up with realness. Rhinoceros woman, big mama in a little world. You closed your eyes and neon spun inside your head because it was dark outside. You read your Bible, but God never came. Your daddy would have loved you. But what would the neighbors say? They hate you, mama, because you expose their madness and their cruelty. They can see in your eyes a thousand nightmares that they have made come true. Black woman, bad woman, wear your bigness on your chest like a badge, because you done earned it. Strong woman, Amazon, wear your scars like jewelry, because they were bought with blood. They call you mad and almost had you believe in that shit. They called you ugly and you hid yourself behind yourself and wallowed in their shame.
Rhinoceros
woman, this world is blind and slight of mind and cannot see how beautiful you are. I saw your light and it was shining. Thank you.
Okie doke. We will talk about that the next.
Here's one other poem. It's called Young Blood, a poem also by Asada Shakur. They think they killed you, but I saw you yesterday, standing with your hands in your pocket, waiting for the real deal to go down. I saw you smiling your fuck it smile, blood in your eyes, your heart pumping, young blood. They think they killed you, but I saw you yesterday in the playground, black skin, sweaty, shiny, hurling your ball bomb into the hoop right on target. Won't be no game next time, because you ain't hardly playing. They think they killed you, but I saw you yesterday with your back against the wall, muscles bulging against the chains, eyes absorbing truth, lips speaking it. Heart learning how to love, head learning who to hate, blood ready to flow towards freedom, young blood. Young bloods ain't got no blood to waste and no syringes on no barroom floors and no strange lands delaying other young bloods. We don't need no tired blood, no anemic blood, no blood clots in our new body. They think they killed you, but I saw you yesterday. All them young bloods must have gave you a transfusion. All that strong blood, all that rich blood flowing through your veins toward tomorrow.
Well, thank you so much for that. We must never forget Asada, and she was projecting something to us through these poems, through this poetry. And at the end of the program, I have an announcement which may help you understand what she's projecting us to be aware of. The program is archived. You can listen to it again. Welcome, Asada. Asada is welcome here and on this blog. Sister Betty.
Well, we have to move right along because there's a lot happening, and it's only if you read your world that you can change it. And in order to be able to read your world, you must have information. As always, Jericho is in the house. We have Sister Ann Lamb, and she's got a report that you must listen to. Sister Ann, welcome back. Good to hear you. Your mic is open.
Well, thank you so much, Sister Betty, Brother Ralph. Always a pleasure and an honor to be with you guys. I'm trying to open up this document where I have this thing written down and it doesn't want to open. here it goes. And other, among other things that our dear friends at SCOTUS have been doing, you know, in addition to Roe v. Wade and many other things, they are also limiting any kind of reparations or, you know, any way to sue a police officer for violating your Miranda rights. They just heard a case in the Supreme Court about that. That is Vega v. Teco. I'm trying to open the Word document, but it's refusing to open. So I'd just like to know, this was a young man who was working as a medical assistant, and he was confronted suddenly by this police officer, who was Vega, and his job, finally came up, and he was never read his Miranda rights. So they didn't do away completely with Miranda, but they did away with any way to get any, you know, compensation for having your Miranda rights violated. So it's like the same thing. So they made this decision. It doesn't reduce the obligation of the police to issue Miranda warnings. It eliminates a critical avenue for justice because the court held 6-3 that an individual who's denied Miranda warnings and whose compelled statements are introduced against them in a criminal trial cannot sue the police officer who violated their rights, even where a criminal jury finds them not guilty of any crime. At trial, Teco testified he was simply doing his job as a certified nursing assistant when Carlos Vega, an L.A. County Sheriff's deputy, isolated him in a small windowless room and refused entry to other people, his coworkers. Vega then proceeded to interrogate Teco, alleging that he had molested a patient while transporting her. Vega threatened Teco with violence, flashing his gun. He threatened Teco with deportation of Teco and his family members and called him a racial slur. According to Teco, Vega would not permit him to leave the room and ignored Teco's pleas to see a lawyer or talk to his coworkers and supervisors. Teco ultimately extracted a false letter of apology from Vega that he dictated to him. So the ACLU submitted an amicus brief in this case, right? And they urged the Supreme Court to hold that at least where an officer so blatantly violates an individual's Miranda rights and the statements are introduced in a criminal trial, the officer can be sued under federal law. But the court's decision says that these facts or any others don't matter at all, even though the court had previously said that the introduction of an un-Mirandized statement at trial is a constitutional violation. In Vega, it has announced that a Miranda violation is not a violation of a constitutional right, but only of a prophylactic constitutional rule that does not give rise to damages no matter what. In closing her dissent, joined by Justices Stephen Breyer and Sonia Sotomayor, Justice Kagan lays out the consequences of the court's decision, and I quote and I unquote because what she says is so important. Today, the court strips individuals of the ability to seek a remedy for violation to the right recognized in Miranda. The majority observes that defendants may still seek, quote, the suppression at trial of statements obtained, unquote, in violation of Miranda's procedures. But sometimes such a statement will not be suppressed, and as a result, the defendant will be wrongly convicted and spend years in prison. He may succeed, may not, on appeal or in habeas in getting the conviction overturned. But then, what remedy does he or she have for all the harm they've suffered? The point of Section 1983 is to provide such redress because a remedy, quote, is a vital component of any scheme for vindicating cherished constitutional guarantees, unquote, the rule, insert quote. The majority here as elsewhere injures the right by denying the remedy. The dissent has it exactly right. While the court's decision does not, as a formal matter, reduce the police officer's obligation to issue Miranda warnings or what individuals in police custody should do or say or should not do and say, it cuts off a critical means by which people whose rights have been violated can actually vindicate the promise of those rights. In that sense, it's a sad day for Miranda, the Bill of Rights, and the most basic conception of accountability. So this is
that, Ann, and what we must understand In reality, what this is the end of the Miranda warning rights.
Exactly.
This country is moving full speed towards even a more unpleasant, a more restrictive America. On that note, we must move on. Thank you so much for that, Ann. And as I say, I read my book, my religious book, consistently. That is the Jericho website that Ann Lamb puts out weekly. Sister Betty.
Ann, do you have any updates for this upcoming summer? I think Shep is planning something.
Shep is planning a curb fest, I believe on, I believe on July 20th, no, August 20th maybe, for Black August.
Yes.
Let me just look that up kind of quick.
You look it up and we'll come back to you. No problem.
Yes.
We want to move right along. As most of you know, July 3rd is a very, very special day, and we have one of the most active advocates and supporters in the House. Gil, you want to give us an update on July 3rd and what you're doing about it?
I just want to address what was just said. I mean, absolutely true, but I think it understates the situation. The court is actually, it's an all-out assault on the Fourth Amendment, which is prevents unreasonable searches and seizures. And I think the implication of that are broader than just Miranda. I think it goes to the ownership of property by women and the Black and other colonized communities. So I think what's imperiled here is much larger than just Miranda. In any case, yes, we're having a big rally in Philadelphia and in hopefully 40 or more cities around the world. On July 3rd, it's the anniversary of Mumia's conviction. We're going to have a bus leaving Union Square. We're going to meet at 9:30 at the northeast corner of Union Square on Park Avenue South or Union Square East. Across from the park, between 16th and 17th Street, we have a charter bus, which is going to take people down to the rally near City Hall. On Sunday, July 3rd, and then bring them back. People who want to go there directly can just go before 1 o'clock in the afternoon to the north side of City Hall in Philadelphia, but the bus, as I said, is going to be leaving from Union Square. We're trying to keep people safe, so we're only planning to about half fill the bus. Consequently, we're asking people for a $50 donation, but we have scholarships because we know that's a lot of money, and we want everyone to be able to go regardless of money. So please call me at 617-388-5445, or you can also call the hotline, the Mumia hotline, at 212-330-8029. We only have a couple seats left. We're above right now 20 seats. We're probably going to stop around 30 seats. Call me soon to make a reservation if you want to join us. I can also help people get there. There are some cars going down, if the bus is full. As I said, if you want to get to City Hall on your own, just get to City Hall in Philadelphia on the north end by 1 o'clock. You can also go to freemumia.com to get all the details I just said. If you don't remember something I just said exactly, you can go to freemumia.com, and then there's a calendar event for July 3rd, to get on the bus.
Thank you.
Also a lead article about what's happening in Philly.
All right. That's excellent. If you think of anything else, we'll come back to you a little bit later on. We know you're busy. If you have to drop off, we'll understand. But if we still see you on the line later on, down in the program, we'll open up your mic again. The same thing goes for Sister Ann. You guys keep us informed. And if we can have the correct, accurate information, then we can read our world properly and we can change history. Paolo Freire. We want to move right along. And I see that we have advocate and organizer for Mamiya, also a writer in the house. So we're going to open up the mic of our beloved Henry Hagen. Your mic is open. Thank you for coming back again.
Thank you very much, Sister Betty and Brother Ralph and all of our guests and contributors tonight. By coincidence, I came across a passage about the meeting between Sister Asada and Lolita Lebron, and I like to share it with the group as a way of indicating how the two met and how they responded to each other. And this is when Asada had been in prison in Alderson Prison. One day as I was returning to Davis Hall, a middle-aged woman with salt and pepper hair caught my eye. She had a dignified schoolteacher look. Something drew me towards her. As I searched her face, I could see that she was also searching mine. Our eyes locked in a questioning gaze. Lolita, I ventured. Asada, she responded. And there in the middle of those Alderson prison grounds, we hugged and kissed each other. For me, this is one of the greatest honors of my life. Lolita Lebron was one of the most respected political prisoners in the world. Ever since I had first learned about her courageous struggle for the independence of Puerto Rico, I had read everything I could find that had been written about her. She had spent a quarter of a century behind bars and had refused parole unless her comrades were also freed. After all those years, she had remained strong, unbent, and unbroken, still dedicated to the independence of Puerto Rico and the liberation of her people. She deserved more respect than anyone could possibly give her, and I could not do enough to demonstrate my respect. In our subsequent meetings, I must have been quite a pain in her neck, falling all over myself to carry her tray, to get a chair for her, or to do whatever I could for her. Lolita had been through hell in prison, yet she was amazingly calm and extremely kind. She had suffered years of isolation in Davis Hall, in addition to years of political and personal isolation. Until the upsurge of the movement for Puerto Rican independence in the late 60s, she had received very little support. Years had gone by without a visit. For years, she had been cut off from her country, her culture, her family, and had not been able to speak to her own language. Her only daughter had died while she was in prison. And I'll leave it there.
Well, thank you so much for that, because, as I say, we must never forget our sheroes and our heroes. And when you put the two, Lolita Braun and Asada together, you have said so much. It picks us up. It's an exhilarating moment when you recount that history. Thank you so much for that, Henry.
You're welcome. Sister. Thank you.
And those of you who want to hear more of Henry's wisdom, tune in tomorrow night on WBAI 99.5 FM, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. A call in number 212-209-2877. We're going to move right along because, as I said, we've got quite powerhouse going on. I do believe, I think I see Brother Kazi in the house. I'm going to open up the mic and see if he wants to give us a few words. Is this Boston Jericho in the house?
Yes. Peace,
I want to commend you and thank you for your wonderful hospitality over the weekend.
Oh, man, it was our pleasure, and it was good to see you and everybody. It was really uplifting weekend, you know. I will say this, you know, and then I'll get off so you can get on to other people. But fascism's already here, Betty, as you know. It's been here for a long time, you know. And they're just flexing, you know, when they do stuff like that. Miranda, you know, that's just them flexing. The Fourth Amendment, illegal stop, search, and seizures, they've been violating that for a long time, you know. and ruling against themselves in cases, you know, like mine, that they were illegally stopped, searched, seized, and locked up, but they didn't let nobody out. Just like they're, so they just, you know, it's at a different stage right now where they're starting to roll back everything, and they're doing it in people's face with Roe v. Wade, you know. It's like, what people going to do? You know, it's like they're saying, what you going to do, you know?
Yes.
You know? But anyways, I'm going to jump off. But we're doing something on the 3rd up here in Boston. Boston Jericho, I saw they had a meeting tonight, and I wasn't at it, but I saw on the thing that they're going to do something for Mamiya on the 3rd. It's 40-40, 40 cities. And we should really be, I don't know, like, kind of ashamed, you know, of, even though we gotta keep pushing and keep fighting, but we need to come up with some more tactics and strategy around how we're going to get people out, because Mamiya ain't supposed to be in there either on this 40-40. All right?
Thank you so much.
All power to people, man.
Thank you. Move on. And talking about brown shirts in the street, that we have to wait to see brown shirts in the street before we do something. As our sister Lynn says, when asked about coming of the fascist state, she says the fascist state has been here a long time for a certain segment of our population. And we know that segment. It's us. And we're going to switch up to Rochester. Ex-city councilman, city council person, excuse me, is going to give us an update as to what's happening in Rochester. Rochester, Mary Adams, your microphone is open.
School board is better work than city council.
Okay, that's...
So the Reawaken America Tour with Michael Flynn and a long, long list of ultra-conservative Trumpist people are scheduled to come to Rochester on August 12th and 13th in a place called the Armory, which is an old armory that is now a concert and event venue. And we've been, pressuring the armory, the owner of the armory, to cancel the event. There's been a lot of visible, protest in the form of petitions, call-in campaigns. There's been formal admonitions from the city council, from the county legislature, from many politicians, insisting that the event be canceled. But so far it is not being canceled because it has to do with large amounts of money and bullies. So we think that the owner is afraid to cancel because he thinks he will be sued and attacked if he cancels. So in terms of response, there are multiple types of responses being planned, including, of course, directly protesting the event if it happens, but also alternative events are being planned at the time for people who do not want to go and directly protest, which is understandable. I mean, think about the trauma that our community in Western New York has just recently faced at the hands of white supremacists. It's not, it's totally understandable that people who are very conscious and very opposed to this would not want to place themselves in a crowd of white supremacists like these people. So multiple events, multiple strategies are on the table. I don't know if anyone has any thoughts. I know that a lot of organizers have been thinking about our own experiences and also talking to people on the ground from places like Charlottesville, about how to be smart and effective in protesting these people.
I think they should get stoned.
Well, thank you so much for that. Very well said as to how to, I basically say, defend ourselves. No one should be fearful because we are planning to have a force there that says we can do the same thing that you are doing from the other side, a self-defense organization, and if they are to be armed, we will do the same. And so it should be exhilarating because I am going to be there. And
I will certainly, I can certainly say that our house is open to anyone who'd like to come. And I know that many of my friends' homes would also be open.
Well, thank
you. I understand that they have been announcing this on different social media, just as the assassin did in Buffalo. Is that correct?
Yes.
I'm sorry, they've what?
They've been announcing it on social media.
Announcing this meeting on social media in the same manner that the assassin in Buffalo did. He announced where he was going to be.
Right. True.
Okay, yes. Thank you so much for that. And we're just saying there are many of us who are going to be there. There is nothing to fear except fear itself, as Roosevelt said. And we do believe in self-defense of an equal kind. And I hope that does not offend anyone, as our dear sister Lynn would say over and over again. I hope these words are not offensive, but I want to be clear in our position. Thank you so much for that, Mary Adams. And before you put that out there for people to come to your home, Betty and I want to have first reservation. Being
of course you do, and you all are welcome and appreciated.
Thank you so much for that, Mary Adams. And say hello to your family and Ricardo, a city councilman. And I hope you had a wonderful vacation.
School board, education.
Oh, okay. I take it back. School board again. Thank you so much. And
well, I just want to tag along and say, it's one thing to be a proud boy, but I'm a proud woman, and I believe in self-defense, too. And this, we're going to say, we believe in the right of humans to behave like human beings. But as Malcolm X said, if they're speaking Greek, you cannot speak French. You speak the language that you're forced to, given the circumstances.
And we will let it go at that. See you all in the 12th and 13th of August in Rochester. Sister Betty, next
All
guest.
Right, we're going to continue. We've got our usual suspects who have an intellectual spin on what is going on. So we're going to ask, we're going to open up the mic for Brother Tom. And we want everybody to recognize that we've got a full house. We're going to extend the time, but we don't want to have to. Mic is open.
Hi, this is Tom. The question has been brought up. What have the two political parties done to help the young young blacks just this summer, for example, they don't have a neither of them well, let's forget about the Republicans, they're not in power right now, but Hochul, who was not elected, she got in there. She was the lieutenant governor under
Cuomo.
My mind is going.
Cuomo.
You know, he had to resign because of scandals with women, and she was the lieutenant governor. So she became a lieutenant governor. Now she had appoint a lieutenant governor, and he turns out that he's been arrested, and he'll be taken to court on bribery. And now we have a mayor, Eric Adams, does he have a program to deal with the growing crisis in homelessness, or jobs program for young working class blacks and whites who don't have work. In fact, he actually said that he's going to reduce the public school budget. Well, we have a foreign policy that is being reported to Americans that Ukraine is an independent country and has the right to join NATO. Well, here we have a mayor who wants us to send money to this neo-Nazi regime in power right now in the Ukraine. But 10 years ago, the Ukraine had friendly relations with Russia. Russia was supplying cheap gas and oil to Western Europe. The collapse of the Soviet Union and the unification of Germany forced the Soviet Union to end its control over its former satellites and would even accept Germany's membership in NATO. The former Soviet satellites would be neutralized and demilitarized, and that NATO would not extend into Eastern Europe. The United States agreed, but soon after reneged on this proposal, and now NATO completely surrounds the western borders of Russia. It is no surprise that Finland and Sweden just joined NATO, as these countries have a long anti-Russian history. When Nazi Germany invaded the USSR during World War II, many in the Western Ukraine collaborated with the Nazis, helping them round up Jews to be sent to the gas chamber. And their descendants now govern in this Kiev regime. The United States is using Ukraine as a proxy war to weaken Russia and even get rid of Putin. And the United States has been spending billions of dollars to the Kiev government, including heavy-duty weapons such as tanks and missiles, to attack targets in Russia itself, like the one that sank a Russian warship in the Black Sea. And the United States succeeded in provoking Russia into invading Ukraine, and Russia Russia fell into this trap. I am fully aware that the Soviet Union and Russia and Putin's Russia have been dictatorships. But President Zelensky, who heads the new neo-Nazi regime, he wants to extend this war really between the United States and Russia by having U.S. planes attack Russian planes over the airspace of Ukraine. President Zelensky is willing to have his his country devastated as this in this proxy war, and those who suffer the most are the Ukrainians themselves, over 3 million. 3 million have already fled the country. The New York Times has reported that Biden has concluded that this policy actually has failed. Putin is more popular in Russia now than ever before, and putting sanctions on Russian oil and gas has prevented Russia from selling its gas and oil to China, India, and other countries. And now Western Europe and the United States has to buy much more expensive gas and oil from American oil companies, from Saudi Arabia, and from the Persian Gulf states. And since our economies depend on fossil fuels, an unprecedented inflationary spiral is taking place in Europe, and especially in the United States. The price of gasoline is higher than any other time in history. And notice how prices constantly increase on a weekly basis, playing havoc on an already economy, in an economy already in deep decay. But capitalism cannot maintain itself without imperialism. What would happen if this country come to a peace agreement between the United States and Russia? What would happen if we do not sell weapons to NATO countries? Unemployment has reached the levels of the Depression of the 1930s, but unlike that Depression, we have outsourced most of our industry to cheap labor countries, including China, a country that we consider a threat to our so-called security. I have not mentioned the other existential crisis, the climate crisis, tornadoes and floods in the southern part of the United States, drought and fires in the western part of the United States. New York so far has been lucky with comparatively good weather. Combating climate change, however, has not been a priority as our economy is dominated by the oil and automobile companies. TV commercials are constantly trying to get people to buy cars that they cannot afford. And for those people who certainly cannot afford to buy cars, they're being told to eat bacon, toxic bacon cheeseburgers that they can afford. And so capitalism cannot solve these problems. We have a mayor who cannot he cannot be recalled because that would mean that we would have to change the Constitution of New York State. Does he have a program to solve the growing homeless problem? Does he have a program to get jobs for poor black and white youth who do not have anything? No, he doesn't. And we cannot recall this mayor. That's not in the Constitution of New York State. And So we have a lot of work to do to expose both political parties, but right now it's the Democratic Party that is in power. And don't be surprised that the primaries have ended, and there has actually been a boycott of these primaries. The weather is nice. They've been pushing the these primaries on TV, New York One. And they're reporting that this is the lowest turnout for many years. Maybe only 2% of the population has showed up to vote. And this is another indication that our political system does not work. As I always say, this is not a democracy. It never was founded a democracy, and it certainly is not a democracy now. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for that. That is a overview of this system and how it is failing. And as we have been saying on this program for a long, long time, capitalism doesn't work. Imperialism does. Thank you for that, Tom Syracuse. Sister Betty.
We're going to go back to Gil for just a brief moment before we go to Sister Gwen. Gil, your mic is open.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure people knew about two important websites. First of all, if you can't go to Philadelphia on July 3rd, but you want to participate in this 40 cities, you should go to lovenotfear.com, where that's P-H instead of F, L-O-V-E-N-O-T-P-H-E-R.com, and you can register your 40 cities event there. You can let the organizers know about what's happening in your city and get it promoted. If you want to get involved in the fight for abortion rights, there's a lot of groups that will just steer you towards voting for the Democrats in November. One group that will not do that and that is focused on direct action and civil disobedience and is open to radical organizing is riseupforabortionrights.org. That's with the number 4 instead of F-O-R. So R-I-S-E-U-P. The number 4, abortionrights.org. And you can get involved with them. They're organizing all over the country, but the organizers here in New York are great and have already done a bunch of rallies. And finally, I just wanted to quickly mention, what I was talking about before with the Fourth Amendment, I can make tangible. I lived in Louisiana in the late 80s, and even when I lived there, they warned me about western Louisiana, in particular a town. This sounds apocryphal, but it's actually Sulphur, Louisiana, where the police would stop you and confiscate things. There was assistant attorney in the 90s, an assistant attorney general for the state of New York who was black and driving through Sulphur and had his sports car confiscated by the local sheriff, who said basically, you're a black man, you must be a drug dealer to afford this kind of car. So, and this is exactly what the evisceration by the Supreme Court of the Fourth Amendment and remedies through the Fourth Amendment. That's how he got his car back once he proved he was the assistant DA. I wouldn't want to be a black, indigenous, a Jew, a single mother owning property in Louisiana right now, or really any of the other slave states that that have attacked the Fourth Amendment through Roe v. Wade being overturned. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that, Gil. And it's another overview as to what we are looking at today and what the enemy looks like. Sister Betty.
Before we go to Gwen, I want to open up the mic again for Sister Ann Lamb. I think she had something, a footnote she wanted to add. If I'm wrong, we can go right on to Gwen. Ann, was there any footnote you wanted to add?
Well, yes. In addition to the announcement about the curb fest, I think people should also be aware that the Supreme Court has also just eliminated separation of church and state. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
In yet another ruling. And there was this high school football coach who would go out on the 50-yard line and pray, of course, Christian prayers,
no, no.
with his team.
No, 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 no. Come on, no, no.
Please. Your turn.
Of... Hello?
Continue, Ann. Continue.
Yeah, so, the Supreme Court ruled in his favor and tried to claim that this was a private act. Of course, he wouldn't be on the 50-yard line of the football field if he weren't the coach at the school, right? And he should not be forcing his team to pray with him. And so one of the responses to this that I saw today, which I thought was really marvelous, was like, okay, if we're allowed to do that, bring out every religion's prayers, learn the Muslim call to prayer, bring out your Jewish prayers, bring out your Buddhist prayers, you know, bring out all the other prayers, because we don't need a white Christian fascist state, right? And then you had asked about this curb fest. So the curb fest for political prisoners in New York City will be happening on Saturday, Black August 20th, at the People's Church. And for those who don't know where the People's Church is, it's on 111th and Lexington Avenue, number 6 train to 110th and Lex. So that'll be from 2 to 6 p.m. on August 20th. And the Curb Fest is a way to connect organizers with community members, because it's usually done on the curb, to raise awareness of political prisoners and share ways to get involved in the movement, featuring a DJ, local and national speakers, performers, artists, vendors, letter writing to political prisoners, and community love. So people should hold that date and get involved, because that would be really nice. And it should be a really good event. As usual, when Brother Shep organizes something in the community, it's always a good event. And, you know, we don't have to wait for the brown shirts to be in the streets. Well, they already are.
Thank you so much. Very, very true. And when we talk about the 50-yard line, it reminds me of the good brother Colin Kaepernick, who took a knee, the least offensive movement that he could produce, and they have put him out of football. Where are we? You're right. We don't have to wait for the brown shirts. They're already here, but the question is, are we going to go the route that the people took when the brown shirts took to the streets? Or are we going to fight back in every mode possible? Sister Betty.
Sister Glenn, your mic is open.
Hi, everybody. Some pretty interesting commentary tonight. I'm so glad that Tom spoke so eloquently about what's going on with the so-called war in Ukraine. It is a proxy war, as I guess everyone knows. I think what's really disappointing, though, for me in all of this is the confusion of where the left stands. I really can't endorse too much of WBAI anymore, because I am just so confused by the people that are on the air on WBAI. I mean, Amy Goodman has supported this war. She has wrapped her arms around it. She has, you know, she does not speak about why Russia would be attacking Ukraine. If we had all those weapons facing us on our border, we would definitely take an action. The same thing happened in Cuba in 1963, and it almost came to a world war. And what's amazing to me is that while all these people are pumping up the public about this war, knowing that it could very well lead to nuclear war, and that the morons that are at the top actually believe there's such a thing as limited nuclear warfare, which there is certainly not. There will not be a limited nuclear war. It will be over. And so we are really allowing ourselves to mess with fire. And it's amazing to me how many people have, you know, I'm over the last 2 years with all of it, I'm very amazed at the point of view that people have come out with, from COVID to this war, and even our elect, well, not even, I'll just touch base on our elections for a minute. This election for me was, I'll be honest, it's the first time I've ever not voted in an election. And I really couldn't vote in this election because the candidates are so stinky to me. They're just so I don't know what to say. But I do know that, you know, in our neighborhood here where there is one person who – there are two really questionable people that are running for the assembly. And, you know, I heard David Rothenberg the other day endorsing one of them. And when I ran for city council, this person also ran for city council. And it was an open secret. And the open secret was that he would take money from people in the projects, and he played it as a Ponzi scheme. So he would take your money and turn it into the campaign finance board, say you gave him 10, and he'd give you back 20. He never intended to actually run for any office. He wanted to get in there so he could use the campaign finances. And no one ever investigated it. It was pretty amazing to me because it was an open secret. Now, he catapulted himself up to the leading position here, and he's probably going to make it in. And the thing that really is scary for me is that, you know, the way it works in politics, and everybody should understand this, you have to have a whole lot of dirt on you before you can get in. And the reason why you have to have that dirt is so when they're ready to get rid of you, they can just tout that out, and then they can get rid of you very easily. So, you know, I believe that this person will yield very much to the developers, which are, you know, still trying to take as much of the land as they can in our neighborhood, just as much as anywhere else. But, you know, when you have weak candidates like this and they got a lot of dirt under them, you're putting everybody in jeopardy. And so while it might be a wonderful crowning victory that he's a felon, understand that you are going to have a problem in the future with your own protection here, because when people have a lot of things under their belt that are secrets, those secrets will come out and they will destroy them, and they will also be the destruction of the community until those secrets come out by people that are interested in seizing the community. And there is so much apathy here that, you know, I think people are so weary of these so-called leaders. But I also think it should be said that we do not have any local leaders, or we don't have presidents anymore. We have a few people at the top. They are led by Klaus Schwab, who is just the mouthpiece for the Rothschilds and the enormously wealthy people, the handful of them at the top, who want to have control over the entire world. They have their own club of people that they run. For example, almost everybody that got into public office was part of this club that is owned by the World Economic Forum. People like Pete Buttigieg was in there. Believe it or not, Putin was in there. The President of Canada was in there. All these people are part of this group that have been put together by the World Economic Forum to be run as candidates. They are their candidates. They are not yours or my candidates. They have been hand-selected by the World Economic Forum, which is run by Klaus Schwab, and they have been told what they are supposed to do. They have been given their assignments, and they fulfill them. Canada has come down so hard on people's civil rights that they're almost a completely fascist state now. And yet you never hear about this on places that are supposed to be free speech, like WBAI. You just don't hear it anymore. And you kind of have to ask yourself, what is it that made people change so much? So for me, it's kind of a very sad thing that's going on, and it's really, really scary. And there's simply not enough conversation about what is going on. And it's very, very hard to speak to anybody on the left about what's going on in Ukraine, because they continue to act like this thing that happened in Ukraine was just, you know, one day Russia got up and decided to go over and kick their butt. That is not what happened. This has been going on for years. The NATO forces have been conquering all kinds of territory along the border of Russia, putting their arms there, and finally it got to Ukraine, and Ukraine is the buffer zone, and that was it. I mean, we already had a coup d'etat in 2014 where we overthrew their government over there, which was a pro-Russian government, and we put Zelensky in, and all of a sudden this little actor, who's just an actor, ends up being a billionaire. He's worth $2.2 billion. Just tell me how that happens. And so now we have the people over there being killed in this proxy war, and I do feel bad for them because all they are stooges. it's so sad that they can't recognize that the United States will use them as cannon fodder just until they can't anymore. But that's what they are. All they are for us are just kind of little dolls in the way, and they'll carry their flag for us. We'll keep arming them. We want to have a really, really long war. We want to wear out Russia to the point where they end up going broke. And that's what we want to do. We want this thing to go on and on and on. So, you know, I got very dismayed when I hear what used to be my favorite radio station that basically is endorsing it, doesn't speak about why this happened. And you cannot separate the why from what is actually happening here. I mean, it's the most moronic thing that when I talk to people, particularly people on the left, that just think this, that Russia got up one day and said, I'm going to go beat the hell out of Ukraine. I mean, give me a break. We've been provoking them. We have stuck our finger in the eye of Russia for at least the last 10 years. And now they've had enough. I mean, listen, when they signed into Glasnost, we told them that, you know, NATO wouldn't, you know, move even one inch over and they wouldn't take any territory. But that's not what happened. NATO just has been collecting more and more territory, more and more countries. And so Russia couldn't stand it anymore. They couldn't have this anymore. So the
well,
ruble
Gwen,
has... Yes.
Thank you for that analysis. Very correct. But I have a solution for you. Tune in, Ralph Pointer, what's happening on Wednesday, because we have been repeating over and over again. We've had people on who understand the history. We've been talking about the U.S. history in terms of breaking treaties here in America with the indigenous people and breaking treaties around the world. We have been very active in supporting the Russian movement. We have been very active in telling the history of the NATO nations, the European Union, and who are they, what are they, what is their history. So please, check us out. 99.5 on the FM radio, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
I know where it is.
Pardon?
I just don't go up to 8 o'clock at night usually.
Okay, working
all day long
to stay up if they want to hear the truth. We got it, and we put it out there. Thank you so much for that, and Sister Betty.
All right, this is going. I see Joe. I see Dennis, and I see a friend from across the border. If they want to speak, Brother Dennis, your mic is open.
Uhuru, uhuru, dynamic programming tonight as usual. First announcement, will a judge force cancer-stricken elder Matulu Shakur to die behind bars? And 2 years ago, a judge told Matulu Shakur that his cancer wasn't bad enough yet and to come back when he was on his deathbed. This is what he said. I wanted to make that announcement because that's what we've been facing all of our lives. I'm glad for the rollback. The rollback means that now everybody's eyes are going to open up. Everybody's going to get on a roll. And everybody right now is trying to save a culture. Everybody's trying to keep and maintain a culture. So I say that to say this. I am glad for a rollback. You spoke on colonialism. And I'm going to make mine real brief. And I'm going to continue with this read I was doing on last week. We talked about colonialism. Here it is. Colonialism is violence. The system of colonialism as a mode of production was initiated through brute violence, and that is how it is maintained. The primary violence we experience as African workers is directly from the colonial state. However, the relationship we have with the state creates contradictions that breed violence amongst the victims of the social system. This is called horizontal violence. The attack on African workers is intensifying with the deepening crisis of imperialism and the neocolonial arrangement. There has now emerged sprouts of state-sponsored groups that are campaigning against African workers who are in occupied Azania, which we call some South Africa, as immigrants. Foremost to those organizations is what is referred to as Operation Dudula. Dudula meaning to push back. Operation Dudula and its parachuted leader,
Nehan, burned by a group, Lahana, Lux have declared war on African workers, referring to our people as illegal foreigners. How can an African in Africa be a foreigner? How can an Africa that has been brought to the United States then be called a Negro? Are we not Africans? Recently in April, Elvis Nayati was dragged from his house, beaten to death, and burned by a group of people that was clearly inspired by Operation Dodula. The police minister, Becky Selly, and Home Affairs Minister have also joined to work with Operation Dodula as common agents of the settler colonial state. We can anticipate that the attack on Africans who have come to occupy Tanzania through the colonial border will be the platform for electoral campaigns. All major political parties in occupied Tanzania have made statements or taken action that suggests that the major problem in occupied Tanzania is what they refer to as illegal foreigners. How can an African be a foreigner and an African that lives in Africa on his own land? African countries created by Europeans. It is essential to also mention that the dispersal of the African nation also occurred within the African continent itself. That is the reason today we speak of the 55 entities called countries that have become the basis of an African from Zimbabwe being referred to as a foreigner and occupied at Azania. The chairman, speaking of Omalia Yesitella, all alluded to this in 2019 in the 2019 Oxford debate, where he stated that the 1963 Organization of African Unity, OAU, collectively codified the colonial borders. Months earlier, in Vanguard, Chairman Omalley had made this statement regarding occupied Tanzania. African internationalism teaches us that Africans living in Zimbabwe are part of the African nation. What separates all the people living in occupied Tanzania are class interests and national oppression. We reject the colonial borders, and as our capacity grows in occupied Tanzania, we will work to organize all of the destitute African workers throughout that country, the region, and the great African continent into a powerful proletariat army under the leadership of their revolutionary proletarian party. The African Liberation Day event, this is what this was on, held by the southern region of the African People's Socialist Party, was evidence that African people can recognize our interests and stand together to negate the influence of the neocolonial sellouts. We speak of Eric Adams. We will sweep the whole Southern Africa with the spirit of African internationalism and guarantee that African workers can take back Africa into our own hands. African workers of the world, unite. Izwe Litu e Africa. I want to say that I think we face the very same occupying settlers that stand in America, who are now crying about rolling back on Roe versus Wade and roll back, so it's going to affect this, that, and the other. We've been rolled over and rolled back on since we got here 600 years ago. I'm saying that this will empower us to make a stand, and I'm saying that we are standing now. We see it every day. We have no choice. And I say uhuru and thank you. I think that if anyone that would want to fight on behalf of Africans, you need to fight for our reparations, our resources that were stolen and taken and enriching this land and England, Europe totally. Stolen property, stolen enslavement, have enriched America and other countries that are Europe. Uhuru, and thank you very much.
Thank you so much for that. There's more history, and we will continue with this. Next up, 8672. Joel, are you going to give us more wisdom? Your microphone is open. Joe Myers, your microphone is open. 867.
Oh, yes, okay, I got it working. Yes, hello?
Okay.
Go
ahead.
Can you hear me? Yes,
yes,
okay.
We hear you.
I've been listening to this discussion. And I have to say that the tone of the discussion reflects what's going on in the country and in the world, something that used to be called a global class war. And by class, that means all-inclusive about all the different forms of oppression that hold the capitalist and imperialist system together in its final phase. And it's true. Everything that's happened in this country has been a rollback, but not as uniformly as visibly to the people themselves as is taking place today. That I think it marks a period where internally the United States ruling class can no longer pretend to rule by certain constitutional privileges, not privileges, constitutional principles that were contributing to an immense illusion of democracy, which is now disappearing. Only a few years ago, maybe even only a few months ago, to many people, not, of course, the people of the consciousness in this discussion, the Supreme Court was pictured as hallowed constitutional scholars and people that are assuring our freedom, and they were looked at almost as sanctified high priests. And when you look at it, just to pick two of the new Supreme Court majority, we have Clarence Thomas, who became prominent as a result of the hearings, the confirmation hearings, which were an attack spearheaded by none other than Joe Biden, who has now become president of the United States, on Anita Hill, who was reporting on how Clarence Thomas had sexually harassed her and abused her and other people in their previous parts of their career. And now you have the Supreme Court joined by Kavanaugh, who was credibly accused as somebody who was there's a focus on him as an attempted actual rapist. I mean, this is like the two out of the nine. Most of the others have not really had their backgrounds investigated. And as Brent points out, the rise in politics very often, even though people, they're given a certain image on TV and everything, but these are people who are very depraved and very sick beyond even the regular dynamics of capitalism, and who we just had this whole Epstein episode that popped into the air. What was that? It was a center where people who were committing all types of depravities could come and get on the list to be blackmailed and thereby be promoted as controlled politicians of the high ruling class. And it's not only inside the United States, although it takes a somewhat different form that derives from the fact that the United States practiced an internal colonialism on a racial basis, going back to the days of slavery and continuing to the current with a growing feverish intensity. But whereas many other countries had their major imperial colonies in different parts of the world, so but what's happening now is a globalization of the confrontations that arise out of these oppressions. I want to point out that if you've been following the NATO meetings that have been taking place and the meetings between the European Union countries and the United States, discussion has centered not only on Russia and the Ukraine, but also they've been murmuring more and more loudly about having to deal with China in the same way. And they're talking about having, for example, Taiwan, which had always been historically part of China since that nation state was formed. They're bringing it to the point of declaring its permanent independence from the rest of China and giving it an independent recognition, which would be a grave act of war against the entire perspective of the, of China's future, and which would undoubtedly provoke another major confrontation between the United States and China at the same time, and in parallel with the Russian situation in the Ukraine, which was just aimed at what the neocon faction identified when it was more outspokenly in power, although we have to remember it still controls the State Department and Defense Department bureaucracies now, that the neocons said that the United States, in order to retain a superpower status, meaning the oppression of the entire world, had to knock out Russia and China and move into Central Asia, because that would be the pivot on from which the entire world could be permanently and more deeply colonized than it is. And this is a new perspective that we're almost openly discussing now in the NATO-related conferences going on in Europe right now. So this is heating up on a world scale. One of the lesser mentioned Supreme Court decision recently has been the abolishment of the Sullivan Law in New York, which was one of the first gun control ordinances. So they're doing it now. I think revolutionaries have to be against gun control exercised by counter-revolutionary governments, just in regular principle. But the thing is that what they seem to be driving at, though, is creating armed stormtroopers to back up the official state apparatus within the United States as a means of controlling the streets. The left largely supports gun control and supports disarming itself under the pressure that it's going to be largely targeted in order to silence any objections to the more and more crude and naked oppression that's being intensified, that it has to begin to learn a lesson that as Mao Zedong said, political power grows out of the barrel of a gun. And that's how all revolutions have been made, whether they're relatively peaceful or very violent. It's all about transferring the violence exercised by the state with the color of legitimacy from one class to another. And
okay,
that means,
Joel, running out of time. Give us 10 seconds and wind up.
In this era, that means world socialist revolution going on both nationally and internationally around the world, an intensification of the global class war.
Thank you so much for that. It's a really complete picture of what we're going through. Sister Betty.
First of all, before we go to the next speaker, I just want to thank everyone for an incredible year. We have increased our listenership 100-fold. Everywhere we go, someone is talking about our broadcast, and that is because of the contributions of comrades such as yourself. Without further ado, 607, your mic is open. Did you want to say a few things before Ralph wraps it up?
Yeah, I just wanted to tag on to one of the sister's earlier comments from the Rochester District, the Rochester schools. You know, as I've always been impressing upon this audience and also pretty much most of my life, you know, schools are certainly one of the most corrupt entities in our society. Specifically the Rochester schools, they were recently, just last week in the news, in the Wall Street Journal, has been under investigation by the SEC for falsely propagating, their more lucrative investment features, whereas in reality they were, they were actually pretty much in the negative. And of course, they were using the propaganda to sell bonds and other taxes that continuously basically pummel our society. On a different note, today in history we remember the start when Johnson sent troops to Vietnam, and coincidentally, this was 1965, of course, and coincidentally in 1976 was also today the last of our troops. Withdrew from yet another failed and costly and, in terms of dollars and human and lives lost ventures. So it's terrible. I do have one question that perhaps in a future, format, someone could enlighten me as to the abortion matter, because I keep reading all these years that while the African American population is it constitutes just 12 to 13%, we unfortunately African American mothers, are also victims, if I may use the word, in constituting 53% of all abortions performed on an annual basis, and as much as 74% in states like Mississippi and Louisiana. So I'm not too clear as to, if this is, as some allege, an actual genocide masquerading as human rights and other, claims, as is almost every scam in our society. So I leave that open for a future discussion and a future elaboration, perhaps some other. But again, keep in mind the statistics I've cited, and that can be verified as to why, our African brothers, have to suffer such a disproportionate termination right in the early stages, and of course, throughout our lifespans. Thank you so much.
Mr. Gomes, it has been an interesting evening, and this question of abortion for black women must be explored, because the issue that you brought up is a very serious issue. And this whole issue of Taiwan, the history of Taiwan, must be thoroughly looked at. How is it that those Chiang Kai-shek, who was a pawn of the Americans, who did not fight the Japanese imperialism in China, took his people and took his defeated army, defeated by Mao Zedong and the Communist Party, and they went to Taiwan protected by the Europeans. And what does that tell you about Taiwan? There's so much that we have to discuss. But we have had wonderful brief excerpts, a look into the realities of America and American history. And I encourage, this is our last program on Blog Talk Radio for the month of July. And I want you to tune in Wednesday on 99.5 FM radio. And we will continue as best we can under the limitations of radio, where we have exactly 54 minutes. We will look to extend that if you call in, but when you call in on community radio, we must contribute. And I promise you, your voices will be heard. And if we lose this station, if we lose this hour that we have on WBAI for lack of funding, we can only blame ourselves. Thank you, my brothers and sisters, for being there this evening. Look forward to you on the radio, on the air and in the streets. We must turn this corrupt, vicious government over and turn it into a more humane, socialist form of government that cares for the people, as opposed to those now in the forefront as Flo Kennedy, the great lawyer of the 60s, called them the friends of the fetus and the foes of the young. And so we will continue. And sisters and brothers, Sister Betty.
Just want to say, the first Tuesday after Labor Day, we're going to round up the usual suspects. But in the meantime, you can tune us in on Wednesdays, WBAI 99.5. But every single one of these episodes is archived on Blog Talk Radio, Human Rights Demand. And you can hear all of our programs again.
And it's called Ralph Pointer, What's Happening. Look forward to seeing you all in Rochester, New York, the 12th and 13th of August. And good night.
Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping make this program such a success. See you on the street.
Yeah.